This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt.
This is Jeff.
I'm Jeff.
And once again, I am not joined by my little brother Jeff, but by...
Brigitte.
Boom.
Yes, Brigitte, not the... Yes.
Yes, so I lovingly refer to her as the bag lady of Armory Park.
Right.
Let me get through our thing, because we are here celebrating the... Something.
It's Mother's Day.
It is Mother's Day. But you know,
love your mother.
I'm so used to doing my shtick that I can't remember. We are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful. We invite people to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on iTunes and TuneIn Radio. Now, Bridget.
So people, places, events, history, and culture.
Yes.
All things that you can thank your mother for.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
Should we give examples for each?
Yeah. People, you and me.
Yeah.
And everyone we know.
Yeah.
Events.
Well, everyone came from a mother.
You know, who's the one who goes out and gets the invitations printed up and... Who handles all the RSVPs and irons the napkins?
Makes your cakes, or either buys your cakes for your birthday every year.
Yeah, if it wasn't for your mother, there would be no culture.
Yeah,
because
she's the one who beats those things into you.
Yeah, sure, and she buys the yogurts.
That's right.
I don't know
yogurt culture.
Yeah, Yoplait.
The Greek yogurt that brings culture.
Yes.
Oh, it has and culture and the
like
yogurt.
It's like a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast.
That's right.
It's a mother. It's
and what about places?
Places, Mother Earth. They're all located.
Oh, the Mother Earth
every
is.
Every place.
We are. That is a place. Exactly correct. So we are actually sitting in the very spacious lounge of Anthony's Cigar Emporium.
Yeah, they have a lot of shiny, lockable boxes.
Those are called humidors.
I see. Fancy.
They are fancy. And we're sitting over here at the Anthony's Cigar Emporium at Broadway and Craycroft.
Crazy Croft, as I like to think of it.
Why? Why is that?
Because if you don't have your glasses on and you read the sign real fast, it says Crazy Croft.
That sounds like an issue you had one night. Possibly after drinking.
I don't drink. I'm super dehydrated.
All right, so Bridget is here actually. Well, we're gonna, you know, we have our community calendar, and we want to thank David Francis over at Tucson Happenings Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to TucsonHappenings.com, you can find out what's going on all over the old Pueblo. And Bridget, besides it being Mother's Day today, what else is it?
Well, speaking of David Francis, there's the St. Francis Theater.
Yeah?
Yeah, and they're presenting a show called Pieces. It looks interesting. It's at 3 o'clock, so, like, you know, get your shoes on and get ready to go now.
Yeah.
It's over on River and Swan. And it eloquently conveys the preciousness of both mundane and extraordinary life events. That's my kind of thing. I like
that. But was it... Here's a mother-related... Day. I mean, it is Mother's Day, but it's also Clean Your Room Day.
That's right.
In the old Pueblo.
Yeah, it's National Clean Up Your Room Day.
Wow.
And I think that's appropriate. You know, there's a lot of overlapping holidays because there's only like 365 days a year.
And there's tons of holidays.
Somebody decided holidays have to be every year.
So we want to thank our mothers and thank them for having us clean our room.
What better way than to clean your room and take her to Colossal Cave, where it's half off a cave tour for old mom. Isn't that funny?
You are so good at this. I am just completely ditching Jeff forever.
But I mean, this is so strange to take your mom to a cave, you know, on Mother's Day. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Wasn't there also some other mother values today around the old Pueblo?
Yeah, there's all kinds of deep discounts Like, well, the Colossal Cave one is probably the deepest.
Wasn't there something like take your mom to Old Tucson?
Yeah. Celebrate Mother's Day at Old Tucson.
With a gunfight.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, she puts up with you fighting every day of every other day of the year. Might as well see a real good gunfight.
Yeah, there's a Clutterers Anonymous meeting. You know, there's a few mothers that might appreciate that. That's at 4 o'clock. And it's on Pima Street at the Streams in the Desert Church.
That place is a little cluttered itself.
Is it?
Yeah, I've been there. There's some clutter. So Bridget, let's talk about you for a second.
Oh, sure.
You are a local artist.
Yes.
This is true. And I've actually commissioned a piece of art.
I know, I'm working on it.
No, I'm not trying to...
Sterna told me to tell you that I've been painting it in my mind.
Perfect.
Yes.
I'm not pressing you on it.
I want to do it, though.
No, I understand. But I just want to, you know, let people know that you are a very talented artist. And you should be well appreciated. And you actually, I totally didn't say this, you are also a mother. So happy Mother's Day to you.
Right? Thank you.
And let's see what else. And you are a disc jockey yourself over at KXCI.
Yeah, I do the Wednesday morning music mix at KXCI from 10 to noon.
It's very nice. I listened to it. Your first full show I listened to.
Thank you.
Except you played Linda Ronstadt, and I totally missed it.
I played the wrong track, though. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Oh. I still missed it.
It's funny, because when I first started doing stand-up comedy, because that's another thing I do, somebody was joking around, because I'm a Tucson native, as you all know, you people, you can tell by my accent.
Yes.
But people used to say, she's the Linda Ronstadt of stand-up comedy. And then my friend Eddie said, oh, that's because Roy Orbison wrote all her best material. Just saying, I thought that was funny.
So did Roy write for you as well?
No, but I think in this scenario, Roy Orbison is Sterner, my husband. And a lot of people think that Sterner writes all my best material. Not true.
It's not true because
I'm my own person.
I know his style, and your best stuff is not his style. It's your style.
I'm an improvisational seat-of-the-pants kind of style. He's more of a let's select the right font and formatting and counting syllables style.
Yeah, he's a very, like his comedy is very architectural.
Yeah, yeah, and so we go good together, you know, we help each other out.
Yeah, he really gets him to relax a little bit.
Yeah, it's fun.
So speaking of fonts and
formats
and everything else, I believe he is working diligently on a show that you are involved in.
Yeah, yeah. Talked to David Fitzsimmons last night. You might know the guy.
No, I don't know. Who is
God,
he's a funny man. And we've been doing these radio hour shows with him it's like the Arroyo Cafe. And basically, it's this place that exists in our minds, but it's like a Tucson cafe where you have all these different characters, and you can see them a lot in the Arizona Daily Star. He'll do cartoons that take place in the Arroyo Cafe, and so you can actually see the characters.
I was actually in the Arroyo Cafe.
Yes.
In one of
Arroyo Cafe.
The actual Arroyo Cafe. I actually have a picture, a drawing of myself in the Arroyo Cafe.
Oh, we have to see this. You have to post it or something.
I will try and look for it.
Yeah, because people are picturing it in their minds, and they need to see it.
Yeah, unfortunately, my cousin Linda is there with me.
Oh, good.
I shouldn't say unfortunately. We love Linda.
And she's of course. And I was just kidding about the Roy Orbison thing. That wasn't me. That was somebody else. Some dumb kid.
No, I was gonna say you're like, you know, the Linda Ronstadt of Tucson, because you're so beautiful. Like, Linda's beautiful.
Oh, thanks. And I can sing, too. Anyway, so we're having this show. It's a musical show, and no, don't worry, I'm not singing, but I play.
Even though
I could, but you gotta hold back. I'm playing Rosa. She is the lady that, you know, makes the coffee at the Arroyo Cafe, and we have a lot of characters like Wilbur the Wildcat, Baxter Schwartz, cowboy poet, the local weatherman Phil Arroyo, and of course David Fitzsimmons and Sour Frank. We're gonna have Janos. Marty Bishop, lots of loco crazy people, and there's so many. I should look at the poster.
Yeah, how come Fred from the Fred and Jeff Show isn't part of this?
Oh, Mindy Ronstadt's gonna be there.
So my cousin Mindy gets to hang out with you guys, but not Fred.
Crazy.
Oh, and not Jim Turner.
Not a friend of Fred's.
Well, you know, there's a really fun part is that it's a very big cast. but we always sell out the show. It takes place at the Rialto Theater, and we record it to play on the radio.
So it's at the Rialto on May...
I'm not going to mention.
No, you didn't mention the radio station.
Oh, okay. It'll be on AZPM NPR.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like those guys.
Right? And so the show's going to benefit them and Tunadito, which is a really good, super awesome charity that helps children.
See, with NPR, I always say that it's not just for hippies anymore.
Okay, so here's the poster. Mayor Rothschild is going to be there.
So just so people get a visual, Bridget is showing the poster to my microphone.
I'm holding it up.
So that you can all see it?
Take a picture.
So it's going to be April 17th, right?
Yeah, May 17th.
Oh, May 17th.
Yeah, yeah, at 2 p.m.
At the Rialto Theater.
That's right. It's next Sunday, basically. So if you get your tickets now, you'll be okay. Last time, they sold out 3 days before the show.
So buy your tickets now.
Yeah, it's a great deal. It's $10 a seat, and all the proceeds are going to charity. We're not taking money for this. This is free. This is good.
So there's no VIG for Fitzsimmons?
It's going to be $10 a ticket.
Okay.
What's a VIG?
That's sort of like a little cream off the top for the author.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because we're all kind of writing it together. So he pulled together a cast of incredibly talented writers and performers.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So at your next staff meeting, suggest that Fred from the Fred and Jeff Show should be part of the show.
Yeah.
Especially since I was a guest at the Royal Cafe back in 2005.
Right, and you have a photo to prove it.
I have a picture.
A picture, a drawing.
A drawing. All right, folks.
Who drew the drawing?
David Fitzsimmons drew the drawing.
Okay, see, now it's coming together.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, there you go. So, folks, make sure you get tickets.
I know, sorry about all the jibber-jabber.
No, I love the jibber-jabber.
There's so many people in the show that I didn't even mention, you know? It's ridiculous. Well, we have
the rest of the hour to mention all these people.
Okay.
So we'll do little segues. You can do...
Or I could just randomly shout out their names throughout the...
Perfect.
Like, Henry Barajas.
I like that guy.
Yeah, he's there. He's Carlos.
Excellent. Excellent. So, folks, get your tickets now. May 17th, the Rialto Theater. It sold out last time. Get your tickets now. And
then you can maybe hear your own laughter in the audience when we broadcast it on the radio. You will be the live studio audience.
Yeah, make up a really like unique laugh.
Kind of.
And you know that's you.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. All right, folks, we're going to be back. On the other side, we're going to be talking history of the Colorado River with Jim Turner. So keep tuned to the Fred and Jeff Show.
It's all thanks to Mom.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show.
We are going to goof off for 8 minutes.
Yes, we are. So this is the Fred and Jeff Show, and I am not here. This is Fred Ronstadt, and I'm not here with my little brother Jeff. I'm here with the Bag Lady of Armory Park, Bridget Thum.
Otherwise known as Brigitte Thum.
Brigitte. And we have Jim Turner with us, who is the show historian, friend of the show.
Yes.
Jim, how are you doing?
Great.
You know, I apologize. There are two things I need to talk about before we get back to you in the calendar. Just want to remind folks that the 2015 Summer in the City program, which is a discount card available at merchants across the community, actually along the choo-choo train line, the Modern Streetcar line, all sorts of discounts available. It's a $5 card. Pick it up at lots of merchants along the Modern Streetcar line, and you go to TucsonSummer.com.
And when you go to those merchants and you flash your card, they will give you that look of approval, like, yeah, you're cool.
Yeah. Is a Beeline doing those cards? Well, I was just trying to plug the Beeline.
I know, it's hard.
Why? It's a good place to go.
Well, it would be great if I could say yes, but I
Well, talk to your boss into getting on board. Get on board. She's hyperventilating.
Yeah, she's so, not visible on the radio.
Yeah, the last thing is the Greater Tucson Fire Foundation's fourth annual motorcycle poker run is this Saturday, May 16th. For more information, go to TucsonFireFoundation.org. Now, Jim.
Yes.
Our show historian. Now, you know, we don't necessarily spend a lot of time talking about your history. Right. Your history.
Oh, my history.
Because we found out earlier that you were a Mother's Day baby.
Yes. Earlier this morning. No, I was born on Friday the
13th. Oh, Friday the 13th, right.
But that is the second Saturday in May is Mother's Day.
Second Sunday in May.
Second Sunday. So it often falls on May 13th, but also Friday the 13th.
Well, so you are a curse to your mother and...
Yes. And it is also the anniversary of Congress declaring war on Mexico, May 13th, 1846.
Now, so was that having to do with Texas and the Alamo and all
Absolutely.
That?
Well, no, that's the Texas War for Independence, 1835.
Okay.
And they became a separate nation, the Republic of Texas. And then from then on, they started bugging the United States. We want to be annexed as a state. And they didn't do that for 10 years. And when they did annex Texas as a state in the Union, then they had a big boundary dispute. And Mexico said, no, your boundary is way over here, and we own all this. And Texas says, no, our boundary is way over there at the Rio Grande River. And so what does America do? Sends troops to the disputed area. And they were attacked April. And Congress finally declared war, and we marched right into Mexico.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So now we have the Texas border.
Yes. And we have Arizona. We got Arizona, Colorado, parts of Utah, California.
Big chunk of land.
Yeah. It was about 15,000 square miles or something like that. It's just, it's basically the western part of the United States. Well, you've got the Lewis and Clark. I mean, you've got the Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of the southwestern states were won in that war, except for the Gadsden Purchase, which we bought later.
Right through the Gadsden Treaty.
Yep.
And I always like to tell people, you know, a little family history. Our great-great-grandfather was actually one of the negotiators on the treaty.
Frederick?
Frederick Augustus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So we had a part in bringing Arizona together.
Into
that piece into...
And it was all part of New Mexico territory.
Right, exactly.
And they didn't split it until 1863. So from 1854 to 63, we were all part of New Mexico. But there were several petitions to split Arizona off. From 1854 on, they kept sending these petitions to Congress. We want another territory. Split off from New Mexico, but they always wanted to split it, the southern part of New Mexico and the southern part of Arizona.
Oh,
and eventually.
So we'd be like Tennessee.
Yeah, and Phoenix would be in New Mexico. Yay!
Oh,
wow! Would we get Albuquerque?
That would be New Mexico.
We totally muffed that.
I love Las Cruces. I used to go to school there.
Well, we totally muffed that.
Well, and then the U.S. wouldn't buy it. And so eventually they petitioned the Confederate Congress. And on February 14th, 1862, President Jefferson Davis signed Arizona in as a Confederate territory. And we were a territory of the Confederate States of America from February 12th to June of 1862 when the Union troops came in from California. So a Confederate flag flew over Tucson for, 5 months?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, so that's interesting. So then when they came in, were we still considered a territory by the United States?
No, then they split it the other way in 63. Abraham Lincoln split it, but he split it the way it is now.
He likes squares better than rectangles.
Yeah, evidently. No, the thing was, there were too
He's
many...
He's like, I don't know, should we do portrait or landscape?
There were, yeah, exactly.
He should have asked Turner.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't, he didn't
When did
want...
they decide on the official font?
Yeah, he said, you know, what the reasoning was, there were too many Confederates in southern Arizona. And also, well, they were about equal, Union and Confederate, but one of the guys said the Confederates were louder than the Union people that lived here. And also, there were too many Latinos here. And so they put the first territorial capital in Prescott, which was all gold mining town.
Right.
And it was all Yankees,
basically. It was all full of prospectors.
Yeah.
Yankee exactly. prospectors.
Yankee prospectors.
Very yeah. nice. So Jim, we only have a couple
minutes. What does this have to do with the Colorado River?
Well, yeah,
what does this have to do with your mother?
Or your mother. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So, Jim, we have a couple minutes left. And I do want to talk about the fact that you wrote a book.
I did.
And it came out during the centennial of the state.
Yes.
And let's talk about that just for a couple seconds.
Arizona, a celebration of the Grand Canyon State. I have a copy of it right here. You can see it, right? And it's a pictorial history. It's a coffee table book.
It's a beautiful book.
And it's a complete history of Arizona with lots of pictures. And Maynard Dixon paintings,
oh,
and
wow.
historic pictures, and Arizona Highways type pictures.
Beautiful.
And it covers from the forming of the Grand Canyon to the modern high-tech industries in Arizona. So it's the whole schmear up to 2011.
Now, can people buy that locally?
They can buy it at Barnes & Noble. They can buy it at Amazon. They can buy it out of the back of my car.
Now, speaking of...
I will come to your house and sell you a book.
Speaking of the back of your car...
Yes.
You are available for parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs?
Absolutely.
So Jim is a... as you'll... older listeners know that Jim comes on and talks really great stories of Arizona history, but he is available to come out to social civic groups,
sure,
any club, church groups,
annual dinners, yeah. you name it.
He can make it hysterical.
Newcomers clubs, I'm doing that one coming up.
Sweet.
I do assisted living facilities. I do some
oh, wow.
regular
That's
every
awesome.
Month. Every
can,
month.
Can I ask a question on the radio?
Sure. Yes, yes, please.
What's a newcomers club?
Tucson Newcomers, it's a club where people that have lived here for a while get to know people who have just moved here.
The newbies.
Yeah.
yeah.
And
newbies.
So they give luncheons where they have speakers telling them about the history of Tucson. I teach Elder Hostel, and what I teach, well, it's called Rhodes Scholars now, but I teach Tucson history.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very cool.
And we're going to learn some more history on the other side of this break, and stay tuned for more on the Fred Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with... No, I'm not here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Where'd he go?
He's gone.
He's morphed.
He's tied up in the back of my car.
Excellent. So with me today is Bridget Thumb, who
Bridget
is...
Thumb.
Brigitte Thumb.
Yes, I am a local comic. See? It's working.
Yes, it is. So, Bridget has now become our regular fill-in for Jeff.
Yeah, I'm a sub.
Now, the only bad thing is, well, it's not a bad thing that today we're here at Anthony Cigar Emporium in the spacious lounge at Broadway and Craycroft.
Yeah,
that thing.
It smells like the intermission of a play.
Oh.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Smells like a tasty cigar shop to me.
Sherlock Holmes' parlor.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the bad thing is that Jeff isn't here to enjoy some tasty cigars.
But Jim is here.
Yes.
Yes, he is. And we're sitting talking to Jim Turner, who is friend of the show and local historian. And Jim, before we get going into the Colorado River, which is what we've been teasing people for the last 30 minutes, we talked about how you go out and you talk to groups and
right.
and you have a book that is a beautiful coffee table book about the history of Arizona from the Grand Canyon till present time.
Yep.
And but give us the website, how people can get a hold of you if they want you to come out to
www.jimturnerhistorian.org.
person. Perfect.
The other thing, if you just go to Google, type in Jim Turner Historian, the number one hit.
Yeah.
There's only one Jim Turner historian.
Yeah, we don't want to see the Jim Turner alcoholic or, you know, some other thing.
So would you say that?
Totally opposite of who you are.
Pick something else?
Totally opposite of who you are.
That's true.
So
what are you working on now?
What am I working on?
Well, let's preface this really quickly, because we've been teasing people that we're going to talk about the Colorado River, which is Colorado.
Right.
And northern Arizona.
It goes down to Yuma.
Yeah.
It goes to the Gulf.
Where is it? It's the western border
of Arizona. You know that squiggly line, or Estevanor Square? You know why we have a squiggly one?
Because rivers are squiggly.
That's right.
And it's easier to map.
Yep.
So, but, you know, the old adage is, you know, in the West, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting.
Yes.
And here we are on the cusp of, you know, major issues in California and other surrounding states with the Colorado River water allocations.
Yep.
What's going to happen 10 years from now when we run out of groundwater?
Yes.
Well, we'll still have tequila and I'll be fine.
Oh, okay.
So there's no problem.
Is Phoenix going to want our water?
We're actually banking Phoenix's water right now.
Yeah, are they going to want it back?
No, well, they may want it back, but...
When they come for it, do we just say, I drank it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Where'd you drink it? It's around here somewhere.
Yeah,
I just can't find it right now.
I have it in a different form for you.
That's right.
We've already drank it. But Jim, so the Colorado River does have a very colored history.
Yes, very much so. Going back to Hernando Cortez, the conqueror of Mexico in 1519.
Now, is that the guy who was looking for the fabled city of gold?
No, that's Coronado.
Coronado,
we'll
okay.
get to him. Okay.
This is Hernando?
Hernando Cortez, or Hernan Cortez.
Hernando.
But Cortez is the one who conquered Mexico. He's the first European and conquered Mexico in 1519, 1521. He landed in 1519. But he also went up the Gulf of California, which is now called
Baja,
the Sea of Cortez.
Oh.
And I thought it was just named after him, but it's named because he actually went up there in 1535. Now, what's going on the East Coast in 1535? Nothing. We got Europeans going up to the Colorado River in 1535. We have John Cabot or Henry Cabot or whoever he is in Hudson Bay.
Come on, you're the historian. What's...
Well, I don't do Eastern history.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Henry Cabot, yeah. Anyway,
Mr.
Cortez
Cabot.
Gets almost up to Yuma. He comes up the Gulf of California and gets almost up to Yuma. And they name it California. Now, why do they name it California? This is the gee whiz. What you didn't say.
So, who named it California?
Cortez.
Cabot and Costello?
Yeah, Cabot and Costello. No.
Cortez.
Hernando Cortez.
Hernando named California.
Yes, he named it after a character in a novel printed in 1510. I couldn't make this stuff up. It's too weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things that you didn't say about my talks is mostly gee whiz facts. You know,
it's not,
and they enacted this bill and so on. It's just like,
There's a novel with a person named California?
Khalifa. Queen Khalifia. She is Khalifia. And this is one of the very first novels. You know, you don't have print movable type.
Right.
Printing press is a 1440 is the Gutenberg Bible. So
this is like a lithography?
Yeah. Once well, like illustrated scripts, you know, and they draw all
the letters. So the monks are hard at work.
Yes, exactly. But there's this guy, Garcia Rodriguez de Montalvo, and he writes this book. Because the first thing they print is the Bible, and once everybody has one, they say, okay, what are we going to print now that will sell?
Then they start making like penny dreadfuls and soap
operas. Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what they do. They're mythology. They're legends.
The Zucchito comics.
Yeah. No, they're mostly legends. And this one is called Las Sergas de Esplandian, The Adventures of Esplandian, who is this guy who goes to strange countries where nobody's ever
heard
of. He's
like Carmen Sandiego?
Yep. Very much like Carmen Sandiego.
Wow.
But also like Candide or any of those people that go to, you know, Gulliver's Travels, you know. They go to places that don't exist, fantasy places. And one of those places is an island of black Amazon women. And there's this giant Amazon woman, very beautiful, and she is Queen Khalifia. So they get to...
Cortez really liked this lady.
Well, he liked the book, evidently.
Yeah.
And there are, when he gets to up to the Yuma area, the Quechan Indians are very tall. They're more than 6 foot. Their legends say that their ancestors were 11 feet tall, 14 feet tall. And there are also legends about finding bones in a cave in Mexico just below Yuma where they found these giant bones of the giants.
Wow.
It's only one instance and nobody's ever corroborated it.
Those are just legends.
It's like
but
Ripley's
believe there are, yeah, there are very tall, I think it's probably in Ripley's, but there are very tall women there. And they thought that Baja California was an island. So they call it, after Queen, an island of Amazons, they find these Indian women that are very tall. So he names California after Queen Khalifa.
And the name now, there just is spread a woman all the way rapper, up the coast.
There's a black woman rapper named Queen Khalifa. So she's evidently read this story and said, hey, I'm picking up on that
yeah.
famous name.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, California.
Yep. So, or California. California.
Yep. So the next time we get another guy, then we get to
So Cortez is just floating up.
And then he goes back to be the Marquis of Mexico. I mean,
they try like a Lewis and Clark expedition.
Yeah,
they used to travel north up to Colorado.
Yeah, they were looking for a passage, you know, to get over to China, and they thought, hey, we'll go up this way and we'll go over. And they were looking for that passage that, you know, would go around the island, and then they could head for China. But it wasn't an island, and they got up, and the natives were not friendly.
So they let's take back. A step back, because Cortez would have had to come from the east side of Mexico.
No. They were already, by the 1530s, they were over on the western coast of Mexico. They were skirting up and down.
Okay, but they had started on the east coast.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
had worked their way over.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're just traveling on horses.
Yep, and boats.
This takes a while.
Yep, it does. But then we have Francisco Vázquez de Coronado. And he's the guy in 1540 who goes all the way to Kansas looking for the Seven Cities of Gold. And here we got this guy.
Why did it have to be seven?
Funny you should ask
I
that.
I need to know.
There was a legend. Here's another legend. In 800 AD, this legend starts about the seven bishops. And supposedly seven is like seven holes in the skull is why they chose
it's
seven.
Magical, mystical
yeah,
numbers.
Nose, ears, mouth, whatever, eyes. So it's seven. And anyway, that I think that's where the lucky seven or the unlucky seven comes from. But anyway, there's seven.
But it's always considered a magical number, a mystical
yeah.
number.
Around 800 AD, there's seven bishops in Spain. Spain is taken over by the Moors from Africa. And they run Spain for 700 years. And these bishops escape. And they go, we're going to get any of this?
No, we're good.
Okay.
We're just talking about the fun ambient noise here.
Yes, exactly. So, I'm used to this. Anyway, so these seven bishops escape to the west to some islands, and they set up these fantastic islands where there are jewel-studded doors and gold in the streets. And so the Spaniards are always looking for these islands. It's like Atlantis. You know, it's in the Atlantic.
So these are like stories from the Moors.
Yeah. Well, no, from Spain. They escaped from the Moors, but they are Spaniards.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the bishops are Spaniard. They're Catholic. The Moors are Muslim. So they escape to these islands off to the west in the Atlantic. And the bishops are called the Seven Bishops of Antilia. And when they land in, you know, the Caribbean, they think they found the islands. And in Columbus's time, so they named those islands the Antilles. And they're still there, the Greater Antilles and the Lesser Antilles. No gold, no jewels, nothing.
There's gold there now.
Yep. Yep. We bring it in.
Yeah.
We bring it in. But jump forward from 800, and then we've got Columbus, and now we've got this expedition to the United States, to Florida, basically, and they shipwreck. And four guys survive, and one of them, his name is Cabeza de Vaca.
Wow.
Cow's head. Cow's head. That's a great name.
Was that a nickname?
How many holes does the cow's head have in it?
Yeah, well, now we got to go to another story. This is why my stories take so long. No. Again, fighting the Moors, we had King Sancho in 1212 AD. King Sancho The Moors are all down in the valley. He's up on the plateau. He wants to get down into the valley at night to surprise and attack the Moors at the Battle of Tolosa. And so they find this shepherd guy, and they say, how can we get down into this valley, some secret pathway? He says, well, there is one place. It's right on the edge of the mesa, the plateau, and there's two pine trees there. But it's hard to find at night, so I'm going to put a stick in the ground, and I'm going to put a bleached cow skull on the stick. This is the 1212 AD. They see this cow skull. King Sancho and his men go down in the middle of the night. They surprise the Moors, and they win. And there's a tapestry, the Battle of Tolosa, 1212, that proves that they beat. And they made that shepherd guy, they knighted him. And so all of his descendants use that name. When you knight somebody, Sir Gawain of the Green Felt or whatever,
right.
You know, they name you after the event. And so the event was the cow skull, and that's how Alfaro Núñez de Vera Cabeza de Vaca got his name. He was shipwrecked. He and three others, Esteban the Moor was one of them, walked all the way across Mexico, and they were faith healers. They healed like 2,000 Indians. They had this entourage. And when they got back to the Spaniards in Mexico, they said, hey, we were up there, and they were talking about these seven cities where there are all these riches. So, hey, it's got to be these bishops from 800. That's why it's the seven cities. But they said, oh, they live up in New Mexico in a place called Cibola. That was the Indian men. So now,
see, I always thought it was like, it was the Mayans or the Incas had these cities of gold, but it was
the bishops.
The Spanish
the seven bishops of Antioch.
So they were coming back to claim their own, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Or looking for their own.
They thought, oh, we own this. You know, this is our treasure.
Wow.
And, all right, so that's how...
I guess that explains their sense of entitlement.
Yes.
Yeah, well, not exactly, though, if you read all of that. So anyway...
Well, let me take a quick break, Jim, and then we'll finally talk about the Colorado River.
We'll get to the Colorado.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show.
She has good questions.
Yeah, they're great. And we'll see you in a minute.
Great. Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, the Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show, and this is Fred Ronstadt, and I'm not here with my little brother Jeffrey, but I am here with the lovely and vivacious Bridget Thumb.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mr. Jim Turner.
Well, that's the quickie.
The lovely and vivacious.
The lovely and vivacious Jim Turner.
And brief.
Yes.
To the point.
Brief.
So, Jim.
Unless I get asked questions and then I go off on a tangent.
No problem. So, Jim, we were here to talk about the Colorado River, and we've talked pretty much about anything but.
It's a very big river.
It is a big river. So, let's get back to the Colorado River.
Well, I was talking about Francisco Coronado.
Right. So,
and they sent he went up into New Mexico and eventually to Kansas. But they also sent a guy up the Gulf of California, and that was another Hernando de Alarcón, 1540. He gets pretty much up to Yuma, goes up the Gulf of California. And then he was supposed to be the seaward support for Coronado. They had no idea how far the Colorado River was from New Mexico. So they thought, we'll bring these ships of supplies and then we'll just cart them over to Coronado. It didn't work. And then they sent another guy by land, Melchior Diaz. And the interesting thing about him, he gets to Yuma also. And this, again, is in 1540. So really early Spanish history in Yuma. And so they're heading back. They don't find anything there worthwhile, and they're heading, setting up a colony or anything. So he's heading back to Mexico, and it takes a long time. They're going across the desert, and they go like the way of like from San Diego to Ajo, or from Yuma to Ajo, the lower part, which is called the Jornado del Muerto.
Ooh, that's
the road
scary.
Of death, the jury of death. And it is. It's like sand dunes and and lava rocks and
skulls, bones bleaching in the sun,
skulls and blood, buzzards on the dead trees.
Sure,
all that
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
So they're out there, and he has these dogs, hunting dogs, and I don't know if they were greyhounds or whippets, but they're little skinny dogs. And one of them starts chasing a rabbit, and Melchior Diaz gets mad, and he starts chasing the dog, and he's got a spear, and he's going to lance. He's going to joust and lance the dog. The lance sticks into the ground. He's riding a horse. Guess where the other end of the lance goes?
Through his chest.
No, lower.
Oh.
Right through the groin.
He got impaled.
He did. He was hoisted by his own
petard. Yeah.
And he died 20 days later.
Oh,
and
that's
in the desert. It's got to be miserable, you know.
With the sand.
But, yep, absolutely. So that's the story of Melchior Diaz. And then we get another Spanish explorer from Santa Fe. Juan de Oñate comes all the way into Arizona, 1604, and gets to the Hopi villages up there by the Four Corners area, and then comes down the Bill Williams River, hits the Colorado, goes all the way to Yuma in 1604. I mean, this is all the way across Arizona. And again, they don't see anything worth settling. He goes back to Santa Fe, and we don't see anybody else until the Americans show up. You know, when you have the gold rush,
right,
then people are like, hey, how do we get to California? Well, you go from Arizona, and you go through Yuma, and you cross the Colorado River. So the Indians have a little raft, and they ferry you across the river. 1849, right after the Mexican War, we got this guy after the Mexican War, and he's kind of psycho, and he's got a whole gang of guys that are psycho. They go to work for the governor of Chihuahua, Mexico, hunting Apache scalps. So these are scalp hunters in Arizona, in Chihuahua, Mexico. But they eventually decide, not long after that, hey, we get, you know, so many pesos per scalp, and they're black.
It's so much easier just to have a ferry boat, right?
No, here's what happened. They decide, hey, black hair is black hair. Mexicans have black hair. Let's just kill some of them and get scalps from them.
Oh.
And they do.
Like,
and eventually the Chihuahuans say, hey, wait, there's a lot of scalped Mexicans and there's no Apaches around anymore. Who's doing this? So they run them into Sonora. They don't like them in Sonora either. So they run them out to Yuma where there's nobody. And they take over the ferry business that's already there. And they start charging people to go across the river.
The crazy scalpers.
The crazy scalpers?
James Glanton. That's his name, the James Glanton Gang. And if they're coming back from California and they look very rich, they just kill them and take the money. Because they're out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to know whether they got killed by Apaches.
Really, that's really bone-chilling.
Well, and then the Indians have another ferry down the river a ways, and they go down there and they kill the Anglo guy that's running that ferry, and they turn the raft loose and it goes down into the Gulf. So the Ketchan Indians attack James Glanton, killed all of them except for two. One of the two is Charles O. Brown. Now, and you probably know that name. Charles O. Brown had one of the first saloons in Tucson.
Yeah.
And one of the first houses. The oldest house in Tucson is the Charles O. Brown house.
And that's currently occupied by Ben's Bells.
Yeah, Ben's Bells is there now.
Right, over on Broadway.
And it's only the little back part of the building. It's not the front. That was like 1880s. Yeah. But Charles O. Brown, he said the Indians warned him, but when the Indians killed, they were supposedly had a stack of silver that was like 3 feet tall and 2 feet wide, and a stack of gold that was like a foot. Nobody knows where that gold is. This is one of those legends of
this is Charles,
lost gold.
Charles O. Brown.
No, other people wrote about this. Oh. It's not his gold. It was the Glanton gold. And later on, there was a book written recently, 1985.
Well, yeah, but I mean, something had to pay for that first saloon and that fancy Ben's Bells house.
Yeah.
So if he was the
Where he got his money, he was the only certified saloon by the Union soldiers in 1862. When the Union troops, he was the only one.
How did he
had
get
the franchise.
Fear and intimidation. sedation? Like, I got this friend, his name's Glenton.
No, he just went and talked to the military officer and said, look, I'm the, you know, the largest saloon owner in Tucson. I've been here since 1858. And
I want to be legit.
Yeah, I want to be legit. Your soldiers can spend script here, whatever, you know. And so he was the leading saloon keeper.
Do you think he had like a change of heart? Did he like reinvent himself? Did he become like a
guy? He did. He brought the first baby carriage to Tucson. And
okay,
he was a loving
there's a happy ending to
absolutely.
All this. Like,
they wrote a book, though. Cormac McCarthy is the author. And the book is Blood Meridian. And it's all about the Glanton gang. And they had a guy called
the Judge.
He just
basically ran in with like a tough group
really
of friends,
psychos.
The wrong guys.
Really psychos. Yeah, absolutely.
So he went through rehab and...
Yeah.
Well, you know, like some of the worst
he's running a saloon, so I don't think he went through rehab.
Well, he had a change of heart of some sort.
Yeah, exactly.
This would make a great movie because this character is like the guy that you can imagine that was like, you know, like in the shadows, like, I don't want to be a bad guy, but these are my friends.
That's right. Yep. I've got stuck with them. Yep.
Well, let me ask you a very basic question. How did the Colorado River get its name?
It's red. It's got red dirt.
Ooh, the
and
color.
All that silt is... It was also called the Rio de Tizon, T-I-Z-O-N, and that was because the Quechan Indians carried firebrands, torches. And so when the Spaniards got there, here are these Indians with these flaming torches, and so they live on the river, so it's the River of the Torches. And then there was another, they called it the Buena Guia, the Good Guidance, but it got the name Colorado... Pretty early, probably 1700s, they just, one of the priests that was doing an expedition up there said, we're going to call it that.
Well, Jim, thanks again
so
much for your history. We're going to have you get back soon.
Good.
Talking about some of your travels.
Yes.
And then you're going to have a book out in next year.
Probably in May.
So that'll be great. Bridget, thanks so much for being here.
Certainly.
Any last words for a mother?
Love your mother. Hug your mother.
And take her to Colossal Cave.
Yeah. Do something nice. Clean your room.
Tucson.
Clean your room.
Clean your room.
All right, folks. We'll see you next time on the Fred and Jeff Show. Let's talk about the good time. Let's talk about the good time. I wish I could just go back to the days I'm speaking of. When a friend would meet you and a smile would greet you. What this old world needs.
The Fred Jeff Show is brought to you by our friends at Tucson Appliance, Unicom Graphics, and Architecture Design Group.